Deadwood Soundwave.
Welcome to A Cosmic Void. I'm Biggs.
I'm Xavion.
So today we're doing I Am Legend from 2007. So we've been circling this one a little bit. We talked about it in a previous episode and why I didn't like it. I have to say I've turned the corner a bit. I still don't like the ending. We will totally get into that towards the end of the podcast. I have a lot planned to talk about that. Right now I want to say this movie hits a little different with the pandemic, right?
It does. Oh man, I didn't even think about it with that pandemic kind of feel.
See, I didn't either going into it. And then there's a scene where everybody's crowded up and trying to get out and they're taking people's temperatures electronically.
Oh yeah.
Which at the time I probably thought, oh, it's like a science fiction thing.
Yeah.
But like
to see potential.
No, they apparently had that. And like that immediately took me back to COVID and I started feeling like icky.
Oh my God.
And you see the lady with the bleeding eyes.
Mm-hmm. Who's holding like trying the baby.
Exactly. Yeah. And I was
scary.
It just hit me different this time. Like those parts of it.
I agree. Yeah, it definitely had a COVID feel for it. That's what sucks is like, I mean, we were talking earlier and it seems like your opinion of it changed a little bit more and so did mine. Mine more so.
Mine went a little more positive.
Positive and mine went a little more negative. I used to love this movie and really excited. Do I still love it? Yeah, but now that I get to see the potential of what it's like, absolutely. But we were talking and we were like, oh yeah, if you revamp this movie, that's actually going to be the perfect concept for it. If you're going to change anything, you can make definitely be like, oh yeah, we can do it off of COVID kind of thing. And
let me ask a quick question. So having watched this now, you were saying in that episode that like you didn't really think about it as vampires. Do you see it now?
Yes and no.
I mean, they don't look like vampires.
They don't. And every...
There's still the sunlight thing, right?
I think so. And here's where I was going with as far as vampires go. I wouldn't have gotten that because one, I didn't read the book.
Right.
So,
yeah. It totally depended on the book.
Definitely on the book. There was no dialogue besides him and then the girl later on.
Him talking to his dog or mannequins.
Oh my gosh. Freaking... That was crazy. We all know he's crazy. I mean, the little boy didn't even have a really say so. The only thing he did was get a little scared and make a little, that was about it through the movie.
If he has any dialogue, it's not much. Like
it's not.
Because now that you mention it, I'm like, did he even say a word?
No. I mean, I would expect him to do the like Shrek part with Will Smith, but it was just a Will Smith movie at this point, you know?
Well, if you think about it, because this is 3 years after the pandemic happened, so he would have been 4 and then probably has no access to Shrek after that. You know what I mean?
Exactly. I feel like if we revamp that movie, it would play into something good this time and it would do that. So for as far as the vampires go, when I first saw the movie, I was like, why are these things burning? Why is the sunlight hurting them? Mind you, people, my mom dropped me off at a theater, told us it was about a person curing cancer. So we didn't really care.
I did want to ask because when I rewatched it, I was like, maybe it was in the trailer where they said that and she didn't pick it up, or was
no,
she messing with?
Like, I don't know. And mom, if you hear this, because I know you're going to be listening to these podcasts, shame on you. She, it's so funny. The way I picture it too is like how she dropped us off because we used to have these $2 movies. I was just like, all right, perfect. We're all excited because she's like, you can go see, you know, this movie and we're being young adults, you know, like, oh yeah, we were very sheltered, homeschooled in a way. Not sheltered, but we were kept away from a lot of things.
And I would say that's sheltered.
Okay, perfect. Yeah, that is sheltered. We go, she gave us money for popcorn. You know, and it was $2 theater. We didn't grow up like rich, you know, or anything like that. And I feel like if you wanted to go to the movie theater, you had to have money, especially for popcorn and stuff. By the time the deer going into the warehouse comes out and my sister looked at me, and if anybody knew my sister, she is just terrified. And she goes, is this a scary movie? Oh my God. And I was like, I don't know. I have no idea if this is a scary movie or not. My mom never told us. And that part comes and he is running. And by then, my sister is ready to be out of the theater. My little brother is with us. He is ready to be out of theater. I did not expect vampires or anything. I just thought these were zombies.
So before... the way I tied it in when we were talking about it was, I think we were talking about, was it our discussion about Get Out?
Yes.
Where I Am Legend came up. And I tied it in with Night of the Living Dead. So there's a funny story about Night of the Living Dead that I read with Roger Ebert. Night of the Living Dead came out in this weird time. It was before the MPAA was putting out ratings because they had the Hays Code and they undid the Hays Code for about 9 months. And so Night of the Living Dead snuck in unrated, and it was a monster movie, which at that time monster movies were something you took your kids to, you know, like right. you would get a chill or whatever, but yeah. That was the most you would get. And Roger Ebert was talking about how it was a good movie, but it was ridiculous because he was watching 6 and 7 year old kids like screaming and losing their minds in the movie because their parents just dropped them off and left. And like that movie is still gruesome for like a movie from the '60s.
For the '60s. Yeah. Cause if you think about it now, I mean,
they're literally eating like organs and stuff. Like,
oh my gosh. And yeah, for the '60s, you know, that had been traumatizing. One movie that got me was As Above, So Below. That movie messed me up for a little bit. It had to do with, because I grew up religious, had to do with like the devil and stuff like that. So I freaked. But if you think about it, those kind of movies, they're for that era. The new movie It versus the old school It, that freaked people out. The new one freaks people out, you know?
Yeah, the old one really, really freaked me out when I was a kid, and I had it on tape. And I would watch it all the time. And then the new one didn't freak me out at all, even though I recognize it had to have been scarier because I rewatched the old one thinking like, there's nothing wrong with the old one. Then I was like, oh yeah, there's plenty wrong with the old one.
Yeah, that you're like, oh my gosh, what were they thinking?
But the thing with the new one was, it's so rare that I get scared at a horror movie. And part of that is just knowing all the tricks and everything. But I felt like the new It almost had a metronome attached to it for like, okay, suspense, suspense, scare, suspense, suspense, scare. And like, I could feel when the scare was coming every single time. So it didn't affect me, because I think when you masterfully do horror, you're like playing with time a little bit. You're like building suspense. So you'll have a quick scare to get people set up for quick scares, but then you'll really slow it down. And when you're expecting a scare, you don't get it. You don't get it. And then you get it. And then sometimes you expect and they hit you with it. But the idea is you keep the audience off guard.
Exactly.
It doesn't do that. It's like so rhythmic. Being a drummer, I could feel the rhythm of that movie and I didn't like it.
Yeah.
Because like I could feel where the scares were. I Am Legend does that very well. I have to say, and it, yes, it's got horrible CGI in it. I don't feel like we have to spend a bunch of time on that.
2007, we'll give it that. I'll give it 2007.
Yeah, but even for 2007, it didn't look very convincing. Like I could tell you, being a dude in his late 20s, like I knew good CGI, and I knew bad CGI. True. And that was bad CGI.
I mean, some people don't mind CGI. I'm kind of the same way. Like I was growing up, where even certain animes, they had to have a certain CGI, or if it looked sci-fi, you know, sci-fi original movie.
Yes. That's what I'm talking about. It's closer to sci-fi CGI than it is to like good CGI, but it's not that corny.
It's not that corny. Exactly. And so that's where I'm always just like, I'm like, okay, you know, we can do Sharknado.
Right. Yes. Which you want terrible CGI or we can for do a Sharknado. Alien versus
Predator. You know, we can do a little bit of whatever.
But getting back to my original point, I feel like the suspense is done really well when they do go for it. When you see Neville in the building, it takes a bit before you see the creatures.
Yeah.
But like, you feel the tension. And I would imagine if you don't know the movie you're going into, like in your situation, you're really probably feeling it, because like you can tell there's something in there that he's afraid of. And it's like, what is it?
Well, and if you think about it,
it could be a lion for all you know.
It could be something. Right. And you just see a car he's driving. We don't really know what's going on.
No sound.
Until you've read the book, like you said, you're not really going to know what I am.
Although,
about.
To be fair, like if you watch the trailer, you probably knew.
Right.
To a degree. But I mean, like, yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like putting myself in the place of like, I haven't watched this. They're just doing a really good job of building tension, whether you know what's inside that building or not.
Right, exactly. And I think that's where it gets me. I think that's where even my heart starts to race, because that kind of feeling, if you think about it, that's like a feeling you get when you are probably in a survivalistic moment, you know, where yes. you're just like, for instance, my grandma told me this time when she was walking down in Cody, and there's a pathway that you walk. And she said the minute she got to a spot, her and her dog, her hairs on her back of her neck stood up, and her dog. That's what those kind of feelings in movies yeah. give me. And that's where you trust that instinct.
Yeah. And those moments are because your subconscious is taking in things and letting you know, I'm seeing something that indicates danger, but your conscious doesn't always pick up on it.
And
right?
it really doesn't.
So you get it in those moments where you feel scared, but you're not sure why, because you haven't put together the information you're receiving. Exactly. It's the same in this movie. Like, they're letting you know through this darkness and through his tension walking through that, like, something's going to happen, and they're doing it without score. That's one of the reasons why I think this movie has gone up in my estimation from the original disappointment, knowing what I was, you know, watching. Mm-hmm. There's parts that are really, really well done, and I understand why people really like this movie. Let's get into the synopsis. So in the future year of 2009, scientists engineer a virus to cure cancer. Instead, it infects all but less than 1% of the population, turning people into mutants called Dark Seekers, are hurt by the sun and eat most of the rest of them. I always love it when they do the future year of, and we're past that year. But that one was like, yeah, we don't care. Like, by the time this goes yeah. out on DVD, you've got like a year before, like it's dated. So
yeah, exactly. And it's hard because if we think about it, movies, they start making movies, you know, I think we talked about this last time, like 3, 4, 5, I mean, sometimes 6 years in advance before they're ready to put out, produce.
Only if it's a total disaster of a production. Usually right, you get like 2 years, right, maybe 3.
2 years. I was going to say, I heard something recently. Now, to be fair,
this particular one was in the oven since the 90s.
Exactly.
So, since the 90s. Yeah, you're talking, what, 18 years of production on this movie that, like, it just keeps not happening. At a certain point, it was supposed to be a Ridley Scott movie. And then he had.
Really? I did not know that.
Yes. And he had 3 straight bombs. And then the studio was like, I don't know. And so they, like, went from a $120 million budget that he had built up. They had him slash it to 20 million, and he figured it out. And then they were still like, yeah, but we don't really trust you. So I mean, it goes away. They go through a couple of directors and writers trying to like crack this.
I did not know that. So wait, was so
at a certain point, Michael Bay was going to direct it. And that's how Will Smith gets attached, is he's attached to Michael Bay from the Bad Boys movies. Though. Yeah. And then Michael Bay drops out. This stuff happens with these big movies all the time.
They do. And here's the thing. I Am Legend. I mean, the book was 1954. I think someone said.
Yeah, that sounds right.
So for that book to come out at its time, and for us to try and make it, you better have made that thing the best that you could have. I can see where you liked it more as far as the director and
just
the writer
taking it in as the movie presented. Exactly. I liked it more because I took away my preconceptions of it. I'm not saying I love this movie. I did not love this movie, but I liked it. Which I was kind of surprised that I liked it, because I was able to divorce myself from that ending, which once again, we'll get back to. I know I'm teasing this a lot, but I really have a lot.
It's different. Well, yeah. And like, if you think about it, like you said, not know he was going to direct that. And I feel like he probably would have went more with the book. So that's kind of probably where he was messing up in a way. It's like, I know there's production, but there's probably things in the book. I mean, we've seen his movies, you know what I mean? Where we're like, ooh, okay. We see what he was trying to do there. And he does like a more futuristic thing where he's trying to get the audience's attention in a way where he's like, no, now my mind's wondering, like, what could he have done? Could he have made this movie like the book?
No idea whatsoever, because it swung so much and I didn't get to really get into script details. Yeah. I don't know if they're even out there. Sometimes they leak to the internet at a certain point. He if they're real, you never know.
Yeah.
3 years later, in the future year of 2012, Robert Neville lives in Manhattan with his dog, Sam. He's experimenting on rats, trying to find a cure. He searches for food, broadcasts a radio signal to meet up with potential survivors, and pretends to rent DVDs in a store filled with mannequins. He stays inside his barricaded home in Washington Square Park. He remembers through flashbacks that his wife and daughter died in a helicopter trying to leave the island while he stayed to work at Ground Zero, where the virus was unleashed. We will have a whole thing on 9/11 when we talk about this, because it is crucial to this story. But you know, you're talking about New York, and you're seeing all New York is a wasteland. It's not hard to make the comparison in 2007 to what happened in 2001, you know?
Yeah, man, that is crazy. I remember being young and that happening too. And so, yeah, him making that comment, there's a vibe there. And it's actually really scary, to be real honest. But it does play into COVID also. You know, I mean, when did we get COVID? Five years ago?
Has it been 5 years? 2020, so 3.
It has only been 3 years.
Yeah, but it's felt like five for sure. It's
felt like longer. Good Lord. You made the comment, or where you're saying, hey, you know, kind of has that COVID feel. It does have that. I mean, if you think about it, look how everybody was acting as far. I mean, it just turns into a madhouse. Instead of it being certain ways, you know, the temperature thing, all that. I mean, people were buying out toilet paper, paper products. They don't show that in there, but the way it's scattered and
the way you
else,
see all the cars gathered up, things like that. That was, I feel like, a representation of what pandemics would do, was it was always checkpoints where people are freaking out, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, I'm thinking of like 28 days later.
You kind of see, they show what's going on, but like that guy just wakes up in the hospital.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yes, but good movies, we get hints of all of that kind of stuff, mm-hmm. right? And we see this a lot in movies in the 80s and 90s, where it's like anytime there's like a big disaster, it's always represented by heavy traffic, being stuck in traffic, people at barricades, yeah, people looting.
Yeah, you know.
Absolutely.
Are you going to be a looter?
Who, me?
Yeah.
In the I Am Legend situation?
Yeah.
I mean, I would do what it takes to survive.
I'm doing it too. I'm like, yeah. I don't know if keep I'm
my,
looting,
to
but
keep
I'm
my family safe. Let me put it this way.
And we're protecting anybody, but I don't know if I'm letting everybody in. My mom, her whole situation on the apocalypse is way different. Like, no.
Yeah. No. Also, I love that he goes to the DVD store every day. And the talking to the mannequins, I feel like that's a convention because of the movie Castaway. Because
Ooh, that's good.
Because
yeah.
he's always talking to Wilson, right? And yeah. it's really smart the way that they set that up. So it makes sense in this that, like, he's completely lost it. It also seems like the rental store, it sets up he's got something to do, right? Like, he mm-hmm. has all these things that he's doing in his routine. That's clearly part of his routine, because he could grab a bunch of DVDs
exactly.
and just take them back to his house. He could take everyone that he wants yeah. and go back to his house. But no, he needs to get out. He needs to see
mentally,
things.
Mentally, he has to socialize. You know what yeah. I mean? And unfortunately, there's no one around. So that's the best way to do it.
Yeah, his only socialization yeah. is his dog,
and
right?
And then you really come to find out when he does get into a socialization situation, we see why it could potentially not work out, because he's just hasn't talked to anybody in 3 years but his dog.
Yeah, it's like those weirdos who live out in the middle of nowhere and stock up on stuff and go into town
yeah.
once a year,
yeah.
and then they just don't know how to interact with anybody.
Yeah, they say hi, but it's in a completely different way. You're like, wait, what? Like,
are you going to kill me with a hunting knife yeah. right now? I'm
Where
just trying
going?
To sell you a sandwich, dude.
Yeah, that's it.
Neville hunts a deer and Sam runs after it into a dark building. Neville pursues his dog and sees that it's infested with dark seekers. They escape and he returns the next day with a snare that captures a female dark seeker. The leader tries to chase him into the sun and is burned long enough where he turns back. Neville takes it to the lab in his basement and tries a promising serum, which does not work. So with the rats earlier, when he's experimenting on them, there's like one that catches his mm-hmm. eye. And so after he gets out of the building, which we talked about the intensity of that scene, right? Like, he walks around a corner and there's like 10 of them gathered yeah. around the deer that ran in and eating it.
Yeah.
And then he winds up getting his dog and everything, but he realizes, like, oh, there's a bunch of these things here. I need a test subject. And he doesn't say this. You just,
no, you just
divine this over the course.
I was watching something where they say they did this in an anime where none of the characters do like a recollection thought or like go back in memory or time or anything like that. You're just kind of supposed to know that that's happening. He's in his mind. He's going to capture something. So when you see him initially setting up and you see him kind of pull the car down and bolting things, you're kind of like, oh, shoot, what's happening right now? What's he about to do? And then you kind of go, oh, wait, is he going to capture something? Don't know that's happening, but you do know something's happening.
Yeah. And I'm going to say something about Will Smith really quick. And I want to couch this before I get into it, saying, like, the slap. This is the last time I'm going to address it, because, like, he went through the ringer in the press. He clearly went through the ringer in his marriage. Like, Chris Rock, like, did a stand-up special. Like, the dude has paid the price. Okay.
Yes.
I'm done, like, putting
I
him through
you were
the ringer.
About that commercial, the slap. It took me a minute to realize what you were talking about. I was like, the slap? Did he slap or punch that thing? Did he knock it out? And I was like, oh, when he slapped Chris Rock.
Yeah.
the more I see that video, I'm so sorry. I laugh at everything. I'm sorry. That's still kind of funny. Just because I think it's the whole dynamic. Chris Rock is a comedian. He's up there telling his joke. And then, like, Jada makes the
Ridley Scott joke, too. G.I. Jane.
Exactly. Oh, that's right.
It ties in. We made it tie in twice.
When he makes that comment, and then, like, Will Smith smacked him. Yes. Did he do it? Yeah. Are we over it? Absolutely. They've gone through their beef. We all knew this was going to happen.
And it's not done. Like, Jada Pinkett Smith was just talking about how they weren't married for a while.
Yeah.
And, like, apparently Chris Rock asked her out on a date at a certain point because he heard that they were divorced, and they weren't divorced, but they're not together. Like, okay, so we weren't done talking about the slap. So
we did it.
We talked about the slap. So now I'm going to get into it. Will Smith is so good in this movie.
He really is legit good.
Like, he's Tom Hanks and Castaway good. He really is. Mm-hmm. He carries so much of the movie because it's just him. He's not acting off of anybody else for 70% of the movie.
No, he's just,
he's pretty just amazing him. In this.
And I'll be honest, like, I thought it was really cool with the potential with him, or the relationship with him and his dog. Oh my gosh. The more it unravels, as I'm watching it, I'm noticing how they like to unwrap, like you said, slowly. Interesting. Oh, I didn't realize that. Oh, this happened.
It's exactly what you're supposed to do in a movie, which is show, don't tell, right? Exactly. Like, it's an old thing, but they're really, really working overtime to do that in this movie, and they're successful. And when he's got to tell, they have conventions of it where he's talking to mannequins or talking to his dog. And it makes sense because people do that. Maybe not to mannequins typically, definitely to your dog. Yeah, like, people will talk to their dog.
I used to talk to my dog. I'd be like, great, we're going to go do these things. It's
as long as the dog doesn't talk back and tell you to kill people, there's nothing wrong with it.
If it does, I don't know what to do there.
I guess go kill people in New York. Summer Sam.
Yeah, just say.
That's a whole different movie. But he's experimenting on this test subject, and he basically kills it and then revives it because the serum doesn't work.
Right.
And so he hasn't figured it out yet. And then also he's noticing that the Dark Seeker goes out into the sun and it's burning, and he's thinking its society is breaking down completely, and that it's out in the sun because it doesn't even care about, you know, its life anymore because the food sources are so scarce.
And, really,
and this is not what we're seeing.
No, not at all.
Apparently this is what we're supposed to believe in this cut of the movie, which we'll come back to, but there's a reason why he walks out in the sun that is undercut by the end.
Yeah, that's like pulling one part of the ribbon each time, and you're just like, can you just open the present?
Yeah. The next day he sees one of the mannequins outside of the terminal. He fires a volley of shots and then approaches it. He is snared in the same way he caught the female test subject. He passes out and comes to as the sun sets. He escapes the trap but injures his leg. As he makes his way to the car, the leader unleashes infected dogs, injuring Sam. He tries to inject it with a serum, but it turns and he sadly kills it. That's like so depressing, man. And I think that's why a lot of people wanted a harsh ending, is because of the dog dying. I really feel that, because people
like
go
too.
Crazy with like dog
but
deaths.
I don't think any, I think to some people, the transition for the dog was really quick. You don't see, I don't even think I caught it the first time where she lunges at him trying to transform. You know what I mean? But the hard thing is, so I did cry. I cry on these like that. But like, you see his pain, and you know that dog is in, his dog is transitioning.
That's
like
his
changing.
Connection to his humanity at that point.
Exactly. I better watch when I say transition. It's transforming.
I mean, it was a word before.
It was a word, and it was,
words mean different things.
It does. And to me, that it was changing of a sort. So it was transitioning into something different. But what got me was, what made me cry the most is like, you just kind of hear it and you know the dog is struggling. So at that time, he lifts the eyelid, all of that. But my biggest thing was that dog fought. He killed one, the dog killed another, and then the dog went after the other one and helped him out, was able to take a lead. But because I watch anime, any kind of like stuff like that, like a character, that dog was a strong dog to me. That dog fought for his owner and was like, yeah, dude, I'm gonna whoop some ass, and this is what we need to happen. You hear it's a female dog and all all of that, and the name hits, and you're just like, oh, oh my gosh, you already know what's going on. And then when the dog bites down, you're just like, crap, we already know what's about to happen. You even hear him say, dogs cannot get affected airborne, but we haven't seen it where...
Yeah, they're not immune.
They're not
immune. And we see those dogs as well, so we know that they've turned at some point too. That night, Neville drives out and runs over a group of Darkseekers. He crashes his car and is nearly killed until a woman named Anna and a boy named Ethan save him. I think she's using like an ultraviolet light to burn.
Yeah, it was like something like that or ultraviolet flare. It's had like, it was like,
I felt like it was like in a beam that went across. So it had to have been a light, I think.
I don't know.
I don't know that they explicitly show it or tell really us. But that's what I'm guessing it was.
Yeah.
They heard his radio signal. Anna tells Neville that they're heading up to a camp where survivors are holed up. Neville does not respond well to seeing people for the first time in years and says that there are no survivors and no God as well.
It just goes dark. It just goes, I actually, watching this around, I understood both sides. This is a man who's been alone for 3 years, and he just lost one of his battle mates, you know, his best friend.
It's also, it was very much the reaction after September 11th was seeing a lot of people questioning God. That was definitely a thing that was happening in the news a lot and in people's lives a lot, where they were like,
I remember that.
The classic thing of like, how can a God let something horrible like this happen, right?
Exactly. And he makes that comment. And I mean, I also understood her part.
She thinks that God led her to hear his radio signal.
Everything else, but also that she's supposed to find this cure and that, you know, or he is. And you get a little bit of that, you know, both sides.
And also, this is a Christian movie. Make no mistake about it.
Is it really?
There is a savior narrative to it.
I was wondering.
The way that they do the end, right? Because they, well, we'll get to the end when we get to the end. We'll revisit this.
Well, and that's what makes me irritated about the movie. Had I not known, like, okay, everybody, I was selling Biggs. Don't read stuff and watch the movie at the same time because you will get mad. But the thing is the creatures, the Darkseekers, had language. They had a way of speaking. So they were vampires and they were calling them feral vampires to the vampires that are knowledgeable, that have had 3 years to advance. And from when I got out of it, they had a society. And at night, society was moving on.
Yeah.
Basically, and that's kind of what this was about with him, is it was like, okay, dude, like, you're hunting us down.
We'll revisit this in just a second. Yeah. Neville tries to lower the body temperature on the test subject to try the serum again. The Darkseekers follow him home the night before. They navigate Neville's traps, like he has bombs and things go off, and then they invade. They flee to the lab, and he sees that the serum worked. Neville draws some blood from the test subject and gives it to Anna, saying the cure is in the blood. He sends Anna and Ethan through a coal chute. Then he grabs a grenade, kills himself along with the Darkseekers. And we'll get to the very, very end in just a second. Okay. But so this is where it's a Jesus narrative. The way that they show it in the theatrical ending, he sacrifices himself to save everyone.
So he was supposed to be Jesus.
We see this in movies a lot. Anytime you see somebody sacrifice themselves to save everybody, it's a Jesus narrative.
I did not know that.
Yeah, like, once you see it, it's impossible to not see it.
Well, now that we're talking about
it. I just ruined a lot of movies for you in the future. I apologize.
Bring it on. I'm watching all of them. Now I'm going to just think everybody has a Jesus
factor. It's unavoidable because it really happens again and again and again.
Interesting. I did not know that. I'm already thinking of some movies that I'm like, oh, yeah, they probably did that in there.
Dude, pretty much every Superman movie has like a Jesus narrative. Like, you'll see him with his arms, you know, out, and he's in space, and he's sent by his father. His only son is sent to Earth to save humanity.
Dang it, Biggs. What'd you do to me?
It's there.
I'm going to be watching for it. No, I get that. Well, and I didn't know this movie was supposed to be religious. Like I said, now that we can kind of talk about it, there was a thing with the vampires that had the religious thing. It was confusing because it was saying...
It's a muddled narrative because they tacked it on.
Yeah, vampires die by the belief of how that religion is. They were saying like how that person believes in religion, that's how that vampire would die. And I'm like, that doesn't make sense. Like, if anything, it's going to die the same way. No sign, the cross, no. Is it Silver Bullet? Or is that a werewolf?
That's a werewolf. Yeah.
I don't know. Let me
Silver
say this
is
too.
A thing in some vampires.
In though. Some vampires. But here's the thing too. Our interpretation on what vampires are, we're no longer in Dracula.
Right.
We went from
Dracula. Well, Dracula was not the original interpretation of vampires either.
Exactly. It was
like, it was a folklore.
Was it Nosferatu? It's,
well, Nosferatu is based off of Dracula. It was a ripped off version of Dracula, but it was the first movie, right?
Right.
But, But no, vampires go back hundreds of years before that novel was even written in the 1800s. Jeez. It was folklore. And then Bram Stoker, there's a belief that he was closeted and gay. And there's a lot of evidence behind that. And so like Dracula is this thing who's like tempting people. And so he comes up with this modern vampire that's basically mirroring aspects that he's trying to show without showing his hand, because they had passed a bunch of laws where it was illegal to be gay where he wrote the novel. So it's like,
oh, that makes sense.
Yeah, which is way deeper than I thought we'd get into this. Knew we were going to get into literary stuff. I didn't even think we were going to get into Bram Stoker's Dracula.
No, well, because if we think about it, how we're looking at different creatures, vampires, Bigfoots, everything.
And this is mixed with zombies, right? Like, it's very much a zombie narrative. It's kind
of got the zombie...
This movie feels more like zombies than vampires to me.
Exactly. And so that's where I was like, if you're going to do something where it was supposed to be vampires, I'm not saying vampires had to talk or anything, but like, if you're doing this thing where we knew there was a love interest with the two vampires, you could tell that's clearly something or someone he cared for. You don't really see that. You just hear it through his expression. And so while I'm watching this, the vampires actually talk and they bring him somewhere and talk to him and do these things. Like, there's this whole backstory that I didn't know about. And so to me, that's what was hard, is I'm like, well, we could have got some understanding in this movie had it been this.
Yeah. Yeah. They're doing a different narrative. They're making it fit boxes that are different than what the book is. And we'll really get into the book here in a minute. I want to talk about the postscript of this movie in the theatrical ending. So Anna and Ethan make it to the camp where the survivors are. Anna gives them the vial and talks about how Neville sacrifices himself to save humanity. He became a legend. Yeah.
Sorry, I just made a face. No.
So I think to get into the alternate ending, we have to talk about the other versions of this real quick. So we had Last Man on Earth with Vincent Price in 1964. Mm-hmm. So this is about 10 years after the novel comes out. Richard Matheson, who wrote I Am Legend, does the screenplay for this. The screenplay skewed very closely to his book, and then they changed it because they wanted a different ending. Neville winds up coming up with the cure. Like, it's a very different ending.
Right.
It's not at all what the book ending is. Richard Matheson takes his name off the credit, changes it to Logan something because he was so disgusted with what they did with his rewrite. Then The Omega Man comes out in 1971, 7 years later. So then they make it sci-fi. And basically in this one, it's like Charlton Heston in the future. He's got a car and he's like running over these, I can't remember what they call them, but it's this society. They can talk and stuff, but they're dying of this virus slowly. Winds up figuring out that his blood is the cure. And so he finds a group of survivors and winds up giving them the cure. And this last group of these villains. And he dies. And so they're like, they're really sad because he is truly the last man on Earth. But then you see that like there's a baby. And so like it will not be the last man on Earth. Like they have this hope for humanity. So once again, they're doing a very different thing with that movie.
Yeah.
So now I want to talk about the book. Takes place in Los Angeles. It's supposed to be in the 70s. So we're talking like 18 years in the future, I believe, from when the book is written. This is written in the atomic age. So we're thinking about nuclear war. Neville is not a scientist, but he basically becomes one because he's got nothing but time on his hands. Mm-hmm. And he's going to the library and looking up all of this stuff on blood. And he's theorizing that after the US wiped out another country in nuclear war, we can probably assume the USSR at this point. Mm-hmm. That the wind from the nuclear fallout is what caused this, because he was bitten by a vampire bat at a certain point. He was inoculated before it happened. He doesn't know, but that's his theory.
Right.
He finds that they have all these traits of vampires, and he thinks that subconsciously they're afraid of garlic and they're afraid of mirrors and things like that, because subconsciously they know the myth of the vampire. Mm-hmm. And so this just repels them, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
But essentially it affects the dead and the living. So the dead ones, there's no hope for them. They're just like going out and killing people. The ones who are alive, which we find out way later in the movie, they advance and have a society, as you were talking about.
Gotcha.
And he's alone at the beginning of the book.
Like, right.
They're not doing the thing where he has a dog with him. Like,
he's just by absolutely himself.
Alone. And he gains the trust of this dog over the course of a week. And then it starts traveling with him.
Gotcha.
And then the dog dies. And it's so devastating because like he finally got hope and then it's smashed. And he spends his days going around fortifying his his house, getting supplies, and just killing every vampire he can find and regretting it every time it's a female vampire. He'll be attracted to him, but then he feels horrible killing him. And he keeps thinking about his wife, and he finally finds his wife, but she can't remember him at all. She's just succumbed with the hunger. So he has to kill his wife as well, which like really, really messes him up. He finally meets this woman. He's trying to take her blood to test if she's a vampire, and she winds up knocking him out. And she leaves him a note that's basically saying, like, we've built this society.
Mm-hmm.
And you should really think about it before you go out killing all these people, because we are people.
Right.
And so he's hoping that he can trust them. But then he sees them go and attack the vampires that keep hanging out outside of his house, which are the dead ones. And they're enjoying killing the other vampires. And so he does not trust them now. And there's like a part in the book where he goes out and gotcha. He has 54 stakes and he uses all 54 stakes in one day. You know what I mean? Like, he's just like, it's basically coding for genocide. Like, he's just killing them like crazy.
Yeah.
And so eventually they wound him. He is going to die from his wounds, but they capture him and they're going to publicly hang him. And so the woman comes in and she has fallen in love with him, but he's killed her husband. So it's like really difficult for her as well.
Mm-hmm.
She's going to give him mercy by like handing him these pills that will help him commit suicide instead of being publicly hanged. So I just want to read the last couple of paragraphs of the book really quick.
I'm listening.
He goes to this window and he looks out and he sees all these vampires and sees there's this society and they're all waiting for him.
Mm.
And so it says, abruptly that realization joined with what he saw on their faces, awe, fear, shrinking horror, and he knew that they were afraid of him. To them, he was some terrible scourge that they had seen, a scourge even worse than the disease they had come to live with. He was an invisible specter who was left for evidence of his existence of the bloodless bodies of their loved ones. And he understood what they felt, and he did not hate them. His right hand tightened on the tiny envelope of pills, so long as the end did not come with violence, so long as it did not have to be butchery before their eyes. Robert Neville looked out over the new people of Earth. He did not belong to them, he knew that. Like the vampires, he was the terror to be destroyed. And abruptly, the concept came amusing to him, even in his pain. A coughing chuckle filled his throat. He turned and leaned against the wall while he swallowed the pills. Full circle, he thought, while the final lethargy crept into his lens. Full circle, a new terror born in death, a new superstition entering the unassailable fortress of forever. I am legend. He learns to empathize with the others.
Mm-hmm.
He willingly kills himself to not be the spectacle of violence because he doesn't want to perpetuate this violence. Before he takes the pills, he's begging her to make sure that it won't hurt.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like a dual meaning. It's like, I don't want to be hurt when I die, but also there's like, I don't want you to have this hateful society and be like I am.
Right.
So he's learned to empathize with the others, but he's also learned that this violence is not the answer.
Right, exactly.
And this is coming out in the atomic age where like we are in the Cold War, right?
Right.
It's really upsetting to me to have watched that ending in 2007 and then realizing that they went with the exact opposite of that, which is like, I'm going to blow them all up. Now that happened because the original ending. So he turns her, he walks her out into the vampires that are all gathered and gives her to him, and they don't kill him. They walk off with her because they just wanted her the entire time. Like that is in spirit with the book. It's not exactly what the book is doing, but it works.
But it was close
like,
enough.
It's the message, and it's the message in wartime that we need to hear that like we need to understand the other. We need to coexist with the other.
Agreed.
And we just did not see that in this movie. And it's because test audiences saw it and they hated that ending. They specifically wanted him to punish the vampires. And so we get this ending that doesn't make sense with the rest of the movie. They are smart enough to make traps.
Right.
They do have a society. The leader cares about this woman. That's why he's going after Neville.
Yeah.
That's exactly why he's like finding the mannequin that Neville's visiting, because he knows that's a thing that he wants. Like which he's able to think this stuff out.
Which is crazy because if you really think about it after that, they've been watching him the whole time. They know he's around.
And they let him live.
And they let him live. That's the whole point. But again, we talked where they're going to have to revamp this movie. If they're going to redo anything, they're just going to have to make a whole new movie too close
right.
to the
they're
book.
They're making a sequel that will go off of the alternate ending.
Which, yeah, and we were talking about that. The I Am Legend, I mean, we came to the conclusion he was the villain. We watched the villain do all these things, but the movie.
Well, that's the thing in the alternate ending too.
Right.
He looks at all the photos of all the test subjects he's killed and thinks about all the vampires he's killed, and he realizes he's a monster.
Yeah, he was an evil genius.
But it's
way.
Like so
well, not a genius. We won't go that far.
But it's so just discomforting to see, like, the book ends with I am Legend. In other words, like, I'm the thing that everybody fears, and I'm need to go away. Yeah.
Yeah. He's the boogeyman.
And to see in the movie,
as a
the
hero,
woman is saying, like, he was a legend.
Yeah. Like,
no, dude, that's not the point.
The whole point was,
but it's not the director's fault.
Exactly.
We are legend. It's our fault at the time, because so many people wanted vengeance.
And that's where I will go with it too. In the movie, it sounds like, I mean, even in the book, humans were the ones that created that thing, whether it was due to war or the curing of cancer. Due to the war, because of the spores or flakes flying around and getting affected on people, or due to the cure, because they found a cure for cancer, but really it sounds like it didn't pass human trials the way it should have, so it turned up.
Yeah, you could assume.
You could, exactly. And so when they change these things around and kind of, you know, do that, I almost wanted the war one, but versus the, you know, cancer one.
And, like, here's the thing that where it doesn't track with the ending that they have, because they refilm the ending later.
Right.
So, like, there's a significance with the butterfly in the movie, right? So, like, his daughter makes a butterfly with the hands in one of the last moments he's seeing her. When he walks out of the video store and he's trying to figure out a way to talk to the female mannequin.
Yeah.
Because he's attracted to her. And he's talking to Sam about it. There's, like, a butterfly that flies in the field. But then when he gets a test subject, it's got a butterfly tattoo, right?
Oh, shoot. I missed that.
Yeah. And I'm not sure if it's in the original cut or not. I accidentally watched the recut of it.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So, like,
she had a butterfly on her.
She had a butterfly tattoo. And then the creature, when it comes up to the glass and the original ending, it makes a butterfly. It smears a butterfly onto the thing. And he realizes, like, oh, it wants her back. Like, these do have humanity. Because he's denying their humanity the whole movie. He sees the trap. He's talking about how society is breaking down and they don't care for it.
Yeah.
But all of these things are not correct. And they're clearly not correct.
Exactly.
It's Neville trying to other them.
Well,
and, like, say they're not human, but they are. They're just they're afflicted.
Exactly. And from what I read out of it, they come to him and tell him, no, dude, we feel advanced. We feel all these things, whether or not we can build or do other stuff. This is society now, not what we used to be. The past is the past. That's what I got out of it, too.
Yeah. Another thing that ties in with the original ending is the whole thing with Bob Marley's song, Redemption Song, in there. He's the first time we hear it, it's being drowned out when it gets to these certain lyrics because this beeping starts. But the lyrics are, emancipate yourself from mental slavery. None but ourselves can free our minds.
Mm-hmm.
Where it does still work thematically is Bob Marley got melanoma in his toe and the doctors told him he had to amputate it. And he ignored the doctors and he went out and played a concert. And he talks about that later, right?
Yeah.
Where he talks about being shot by the CIA because he was trying to bring peace.
Right.
But it was the same kind of deal with the toe, like he just kept going and it wound up killing him.
Right.
But the other part of it is those lyrics are saying you have to, like, free yourself from, like, the box you've put your mind into.
Yeah.
And that is an encapsulation of what the original ending was of this movie, is, like, you have to, like, take away this idea that they're just thoughtless monsters. They're not.
Yeah. Well, I'll be honest, my jaw, the ending of the movie, it dropped. When she goes, and he got the cure, and he was a legend. And I was just like, that doesn't sound right.
Yeah.
So I was watching, I will say, I'm glad I did read and watch at the same time. So I was like, okay, all right, I see what they did there. But like you said, like, it is about freeing yourself and all that. I felt like even the mannequins were a statement that was, he was kind of just used to them kind of being there. And it was the kind of, he was building
his own society with fake things.
With fake things, but he also didn't give himself time to really grow or learn, you know?
He was Shrek.
He was Shrek.
Like, he's watching
exactly.
The Shrek DVD.
Dude, this was,
and it's
Shrek,
like,
on a scary
Shrek
version.
Is alone and doesn't want people in.
Yeah.
And then slowly grows to deal with them. And then he creepily repeats Shrek, like, for like a solid
a
2 minutes.
And then you're just watching a movie like, is this really happening?
Dude, if you just put low strings on there with an ominous tone, man, that would
kind of
play
freaky.
A little different.
Well, and the way that both, like, the son and mom look at him, like, happening. But like, no, this movie, and again, I would have really killed for them to talk or some dialogue or something that gave us a thing that said, this is what's going on. We didn't get that, but again, it unraveled itself or unwrapped itself in a way that you were like, okay, I understand. But it's like, you didn't know they were watching him until the mannequin part. You didn't realize that they set up the same trap and he didn't even realize it. You know what I mean?
He's like, oh, they were just using my old trap. But it's like, yeah, but they made it work, dude, with a different car and everything.
They've been spying
on him. Use an ambulance for the weight to pull it up.
Like, and good Lord.
They use like a different car. Yeah. So it's like, clearly they understood
like
how
bus
it worked.
Or something. I was like, oh my gosh, really took him out. And that was the kind of stuff where I was like, he's not realizing all these things going on around him. And to going into that point where he shuts himself off to the world, he built up an anxiety. I mean, he doesn't leave his house at night, obviously, but really there's a whole new
society
growing on the horizon. And he does not know this. And so that's where I was kind of irritated with the movie and then reading that. And I'm like, damn, I actually would have wished I would have wanted more towards the book.
Yeah, this is where the test audience thing sucks. And so when I think back to when this movie came out, I was so upset at the ending, and then I immediately bought it on DVD because I'm like, they have to have an alternate ending on this. Like, it just felt like thematically there had to have been a different ending, which there was, but it wasn't on the DVD. So I was like doubly pissed because I bought this movie and I'm like, what? You don't even have an alternate ending?
Yeah.
Because like, I knew at the time, big studio movies, they always did an alternate ending and they tested which one audiences liked better. That was just the standard of how you did it with the big studio.
Yeah.
And this was Warner Brothers, so that's what they did, you know?
Yeah.
This was like test screening's fault. This was studios meddling and trying to like please everybody. But we were just past 9/11, like what, 6 years later.
Mm-hmm.
We're in the Iraq War. We're in the Afghanistan War. Right. And it changed cinema so much. Like, everything got so much more violent in film and it was so much more vengeful. And so the examples I'll give is like torture porn, for lack of a better term, basically starts around 2004. Like, this is when we're going into Iraq and we're seeing not just the fallout from Ground Zero, but also we're watching people go in and kill people like graphically on the news constantly. Like, literally on live feeds.
I remember
all day
that.
Long.
Well, and if you think about it, a lot of stuff like social media was coming out, MySpace, and internet was starting to not be more dial up, but more hands free, and Wi Fi was coming into play. So
when you think about like the Saw franchise, mm-hmm. it makes sense, dude. It's vengeful and it's incredibly graphic. That movie could not have come out in 2000, but in 2004, it made sense for the landscape.
That makes sense.
You've got stuff about worlds being annihilated, which we had apocalypse stuff before that. It just went to another level. And even in movies that weren't necessarily about apocalypses, like War of the Worlds, you know, we're seeing representations of buildings like falling and like people covered in dust and things like that. Like, that's what we saw on the news after September 11th constantly. And then we had these really bleak narratives, even in like a Batman movie. Like, we have the Dark Knight. He's not allowed to be a hero at the end of it, you know?
Yeah.
And they're talking about things that the government does to like get stuff done, but it's like not necessarily okay.
Yeah. Dark Knight was definitely interesting.
I think it's a great movie, but it's also like, it fits right in with all that.
Mm-hmm.
And then another bleak movie I can think of is The Mist, which is directly about 9/11.
Oh yeah, one of my favorite movies.
Okay, so I'm gonna spoil this for people who haven't seen The Mist and you want to watch it. Just check out real quick. Come back in a minute. But
yeah,
at the end of the movie, Thomas Jane's character, he's with his family,
like,
essentially.
It's like, yeah, basically
in a car.
The survivors that survive.
And throughout that movie, everybody who dies is reacting in fear, which is what happened after September 11th. Is like, every time people reacted in fear, things got demonstrably worse. And so he kills everybody and doesn't have enough bullets to kill himself. And then you see the army come in and it would have been okay, but he was acting in fear. And so he killed everybody. Like,
yeah,
this is another narrative that makes sense.
They were like not thinking they were going to get out of The Mist. The hard part is I basically, like, he killed his son, killed the girl, and there was like two other people. And it was like so hard because at that very moment, he kills the last person and he goes to off himself. The Mist lift, and you're just like, holy what? You know what I mean? That's why I think patience is key. I get it. In the mist, you guys got in the car, you were trying to escape, things happen. You never know what creature's out there. I mean, if that happens, it happens.
But it's bleak.
It's so bleak.
It's absolutely bleak. And it's talking about the mindset we were in at that point. And I Am Legend is bleak, even though they have that whole, you know, he saves the rest of humanity thing.
Yeah.
It's still him dying. He's still like pulling a hand grenade and killing them all. It's like a vengeful act. And that's where we're at mentally.
I mean, if you think about it, some people do think this way, though, where, I mean, to that society, the vampire society, he was a legend, and he was a legend of being a villain.
In the book. In this movie. No, because apparently they're thoughtless, even though they're not thoughtless.
Yeah,
you know what
exactly.
I mean?
Exactly. But really, like, the movie could have done that too. But the hard thing is Captain Marvel, they're going against the Skrulls. And going against them. And then come to find out that society was actually a good society. They've been trying to do all these things, trying to make their own lives. And here these people are coming in and destroying that. And so it could look like that on one side, but then on the other side of the movie,
that's a perspective we have with clarity because we're out of that time
which
period,
is why
right?
I think
you would not get this in 2007.
Which is why I think social media during that time, I think social media now is awful, because I watch stuff where I don't know if I'm even supposed to like it or not, because to me, that person looked like the villain, but really everybody else is like, oh my God, they were saving their lives and doing everything else.
And I do want to say, if you're thinking that we're grasping at straws talking about this, I do want to point out the second to last line in the theatrical release is at 8:52, he gave his life to defend it. You cannot read that as anything but a military
thing. Definitely.
Like, that's exactly the way we were talking at the point, is like, these soldiers gave our lives to defend our country. It was just said and said and said. We're still in the Bush administration at this point. Everything is the axis of evil. It's like, you're either with us or against us.
But
like, he was othering the crap out of the rest of the world.
And but they did that in the mist with the soldier, you know what I mean? They put him in a spot. I mean, they killed the guy, you know what I mean? And they weren't thinking. They assumed it was the government. And so that's what makes this all hard, is even throughout the movie, they were sitting, not the mist, but I Am Legend, you know, they said it was the cancer. And that's where I was like, dang, dude, you guys are trying to cure cancer and ended up, you know, killing society instead. And so
that leads me back to the COVID thing. Now, I want to ask you something, and I'm trying to be a little bit funny, but also serious. So knowing what we know now, having gone through COVID, when they develop that serum in the theatrical ending, how many people actually take the serum?
Yes.
And like, how many people are like, no, this is just some dark seeker propaganda trying to track us.
We already know. I don't know, honestly. I don't know. And it's hard because you can touch on stuff like that, but it's so hard because really
before this time,
so
I think it was universally understood in movies. Oh, they developed the serum, it's going to be okay. Now I'm like, no, they're probably going to tear themselves apart because they developed the serum.
Exactly. Like, here we are. Well, and if you think about it, like, not everything connects with everything. Some people might not be able to take that cure. Some people might not be able to do these things. You know what I mean? Like, everybody's blood and mindsets and all of that. That's also what I got out of this, like, reading both of them and seeing how everything is. I really want to read the book now just because I want to know about the society.
Well, I got good news for you. I have the paperback sitting in my living room so you can borrow it.
I most likely will. I really do enjoy this movie. I think it was good. I'm glad we got to talk about it. Like I said, my feelings are a little bit better again. I just, knowing what was going on and then like hearing you talk about it and like the movie versus the book, and I was like, now I really want to know. And so when I went in there and I started searching, I was like, what?
Yeah, and I'm not going to lie. You can look at it as a race narrative. You can look at it as an age narrative. Like, you can look at it as he's the older generation and the younger generation has changed and he's moved on. You could look at it as a war narrative. Like, it's just a general other narrative. Like,
absolutely.
When you're othering people, you're taking away their humanity. And you're in the wrong when you do that. Mm-hmm. And that's the point of the Neville character.
The Neville character, yeah.
Yeah, is that, like, he is in the wrong. He is the monster. Yeah.
Yeah. And like I said, my jaw dropped at the end. And it's how she says it in her tone, because really you saw what the movie was doing. And they did that. And so when she goes, he went down as a legend. And you're just like...
And also, let's think about her interactions with him in this movie, yeah, too. Like, she saves him, and then he immediately yells at her and the kid.
He has no...
complains about the bacon.
Yeah.
I was saving that bacon. And then, like, creepily repeats Shrek. And then... on top of everything else, blows himself up with a hand grenade. Like, really? You're going to talk about him like he's a legend? Like, I don't know, man.
Like, oh,
he's a really creepy dude. I'm glad he found the serum, but like, he was creepy.
And the hard thing is that's what I will say. Yeah, he was really creepy. I mean, he was alone. But the hard thing is, and I'll be my last, is that's where I was like, oh, y'all made a cure? The gay conversion?
Okay.
I went to a camp, you know, someone...
You did?
Yeah. So I haven't told anybody Zavy. About that, but yeah.
We kind of have to cover like a gay conversion. Have you seen, But I'm a Cheerleader?
Yeah.
Do you want to cover that movie at some point? We
definitely should.
Yeah.
But I've went to that. Now, I won't say who sent me because I don't even know if they knew they did. But I went to a boot camp.
Dude, I am so sorry, man. Oh, that's horrible.
Know? But I will say this movie did a lot of that. You know what I mean? That's why when you're saying it could relate to a lot of stuff. Yeah, I went through some things where you can't change people. And when we're getting to a point where we talk about all the time, Gen Z, millennials, all of that, it's hard because we eventually are going to have to go to a point where we are like, yes, this is new. There's a potential for all these societies. And unfortunately, because he just went on a killing spree, he just went and Dahmered these freaking vampires. Let's be honest. He went and done killed all these people. They look at him as a criminal. And they're like, no, you went and killed a bunch of us. Do you really expect us to sit here and either one, want you to be part of our society? Stole
his wife, probably? Stole it.
Yeah, that's true, too.
Like that's where it really starts. Like, they go in the building, but then, like, he steals the wife. He
steals the wife. You stole the queen of these people. And now you expect us to show you mercy? And so that's where I will say I saw the, like, cultural thing where they're like, dude, society's growing without you. So either...
Yeah.
Become one or don't.
I will say I'm glad that this sequel is happening after watching it, because it seems like they're really going to push that alternate ending. And I would not be shocked if they start the sequel with showing the alternate ending at the beginning to catch people up and be like, yeah, that other thing didn't happen. This is what happened. You kind of have to if Neville's still alive. You really have to. It's like, it's complicated, but I think we're at a time where you can do this now. Like, we've had how many sequels where they're like, ignore Halloween 2 through 10. Like, we're rebooting this.
Here's what we're doing. And just because we threw these characters in. But The Cure, this is where I'll go with it to the last. That's what I was going to say about The Cure thing for the movie versus what they're going to do with the second movie. The Cure to me was like, pray the gay away.
Yeah.
You know, or do this away. I really don't want there to be a cure. That really puts into perspective that he was a hero, and that's not true at all.
Yeah, it's so funny you say that, because like, that is a centerpiece of the three movies, is that it's all about the cure in some way.
Yeah.
And like, that is not the book
it's pray the gay away. It's do these things away.
It's emphasizing the wrong thing.
Yes.
Like, and the title I Am Legend ties into the book because he realizes that he's the monster in the dark.
Right. You know? Which, do you ever think when people are like, because you hear people say like, I am a legend. Really? Like, sometimes I'm like, so are you saying you're the hero or are you saying you're the villain?
Yeah, dude.
You know, like, think if you think about that, like,
Rasputin was a legend.
Yeah.
Hitler was a legend.
Yeah, that is true. Again, my jaw dropped when she said, oh, and he went down as a legend. It's like, damn, dude. To me, you were out there just killing whatever you wanted, and there was no repercussion of it. And so with the second one, I really hope that they really do it. But if you're going to do this movie right, where it is looked upon like the book, you're going to have to redo the whole movie.
All bets go off with the sequel for me. I don't know what they're going to do, but I do know the director who's writing this one. He's not going to direct it. He was saying that he was looking at The Last of Us and like really thinking about that. And I do know that he wanted that original ending. So I have faith that this will be okay. I'm not going to go in expecting the book because like this is new ground. If it can, going with that original ending, that means that that's the tone they're looking for.
I just have this feeling they're going to do this thing where they do the book in a way. You know how the dog dog wasn't originally, he met the dog. Like, I feel like that's going to happen too. Like, he's going to meet this dog.
Oh, I think it's going to be how other survivors like are going after the Dark Seekers. And I think
somehow the cure, I think
Neville and Anna are going to be like, no, this isn't the way forward. That's my theory. Or it could be that they're just trying to turn back. I don't know. Like, it's interesting to me. I will check it out. Wake up, pop culture up by dying on the job. And I kinda like to be the one to tell you, girl, you may not to be. Oh yeah. A Cosmic Void was created by Alex Small and Jeremiah Perez. It's hosted by Alex Small and Xavier Cousins. Produced by Aaron Donaldson and Alex Small. The theme song Duke of New York A No. 1 was written by Dub Campbell and Greg Vivrette. The song is performed by Tonight We Ride. A Cosmic Void is a Redwood Sound Labs production.
Okay, kiddo, I lost my library of sound, so I need you to do some sound effects for me.
I don't want to do this, Dad.
Look, I'm just trying to put food on the table, but if you don't want to help...
All right.
Here Biggs chronicle a galaxy of genre. Listen to the deconstruction of film on A Cosmic Void. Charles is a Purple Heart recipient and cinematographer. Aaron is a professor and critical cultural scholar. Together they explore the narrative, effective, and production politics of war cinema on Real War Project. That's R-E-E-L, War Project. Finally, a podcast that's dedicated to talking about your favorite sports movies. Whether you want to hear a breakdown of the plot, arguments about who's the MVP of the film, or crit and lit about it, you'll find it all on Fields of Glory. Listen to the show that will help you have a better life with your beloved pets. It handles topics like proper food, nutrition, positive reinforcement training, and more. Certified dog behavior consultant Charlotte Peltz welcomes your pet concerns and questions in the podcast, Living With Your Dog. Zach and Matt are two horror enthusiasts of varying experience discussing horror movies through the scope of content, context, and comedy. They'll hit on the good ones and the classics, but they're really excited for the bad ones. Listen to Watch No Evil. You can find all of Redwood Sound Lab shows at Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, or wherever you listen to podcasts.